Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, everybody, the Toy Department's back. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. It's Tuesday. How are you, sir? You got any big news today?
No. That's funny. You said that as if you knew that I had big news to share. But no, I don't have anything interesting to say to people. Oh, I could tell people, you know, if Derek sounds a little tinny, don't panic. It's just, you know, he has the unfortunate...
I'm just in a tinny mood. That's all.
Well, it's just, you know, sometimes it's tough because Derek's at a radio studio, so it's really hard for him to find a good recording setup. And you know, that's
the studio. In this radio station that literally has eight people in it at any point, one point in time, the studios that we need are all occupied. It's pretty amazing. Eight people is the max it has in it. Half the day, it's like three people.
Work from home, except when Derek needs the studio, at which point everyone should use a studio.
Yeah, some of it is our recording time. We recorded a particularly inopportune time of day for this, but you know, you have children, multiple children. So
I know. Don't I know it?
So let's get into some content though. stop talking about and tinny my voices. Where do you want to start this week? I'll throw it out to you from the homework.
Top
Chef, or should we talk about some shows?
Let's save Top Chef because I just watched Without Remorse like less than 12 hours ago.
Me too.
Cool. So it's fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
I guess that also means we both waited until the very last minute to watch it.
You know what's not fresh in my mind? The name of the show. I've Googled Michael B. Jordan Tom Clancy movie.
Yeah.
Multiple times to try to remember the actual name of the show. And that certainly speaks to. Me getting older, I think. But sure. More than that, I think it also speaks to the just boilerplate genericness of this whole enterprise. Am I crazy about that?
No, I thought the most noteworthy... I feel like we should start... I didn't think it was bad.
Oh, I thought it was bad.
Oh, really?
I mean, not like outrageously bad or offensively bad... I just thought it was grim, joyless, and mediocre, basically. Like, it was fine. It wasn't, like, unwatchable. It just
right.
It wasn't anything. You know what I mean?
It wasn't anything interesting or original. It was a Tom Clancy joint, you know? It wasn't... It's not like the acting was terrible or... I mean, it was barely written at all, right? It was mostly just... military operations and it wasn't like it was a pretty, you know, standard they killed my wife and now I'm out for revenge sort of deal.
It was very Mendoza from The Simpsons. Right?
Like, I'm not enough of a Simpsons head to get that reference, but yeah, probably.
Okay. So, like, McBain, right, is the Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, action movie franchise, fictional franchise in that, right? And, uh-huh. Like, Mendoza was, like, the partner who's, like, definitely on his last day and about to, like, sail on his, like, retirement boat, you know what I mean?
He's too old for this shit.
Of course gets killed, and you get the shot of McBain, like, you know, holding his dead, lifeless body and yelling to the heavens, Mendoza!
Right. Yeah. It's that.
That's the wife in this, right? Like, yeah. Two scenes with her being sweet and pregnant, and then you know she's getting it. You know what I mean?
I can't believe they killed Lauren London. Yeah, exactly. But I did think it was, like, good action. Like, it was,
sure, I guess.
It was entertaining and a little different, you know, a little in the, like, John Wick close up, more realistic fighting stuff, which I do enjoy on a certain level. I mean, it's a very, like, escapist enjoyment. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's where I'm at. This movie was fine, and if you like military operations on screen, you'll probably enjoy yourself. I do wonder what makes Michael B. Jordan choose a film like this, and like what makes a film like this get made in the first place, you know?
CTC. That's it.
What?
CTC, cut the check.
Oh, CTC. You mean for Michael B. Jordan?
Yeah, that's what made him do it.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure Amazon wrote him a nice check.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I'm not sure the check is that critical to his lifestyle. He seems like a guy who makes pretty intentional choices in general, right?
In general, yeah, I think. But, you know, it's the one for me, one for them sort of vibe with him. I think there were a couple of hints at this. I do think that he probably there's a representational idea that appealed to him, and that I don't think we've seen a lot of black dudes fronting Tom Clancy movies, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in that respect,
they did do a little of that.
Right. Well, but doesn't this sort of fit in the, you know, sure, there's nothing special about this, but Tom Cruise has made this not special movie 17 times, and it's about time they let Michael B. Jordan do it?
I more feel like this is like, I don't think Tom Cruise would do this movie. has he done a Clancy movie?
Maybe that's the wrong guy. Harrison Ford?
But like Affleck and right, John Krasinski.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who else did. I think Alec Baldwin did a Clancy movie. I'm trying to remember who else. Harrison Ford was in a few, right? So
was in what?
80s, I guess. Wasn't Harrison Ford in a few Clancy movies?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. Like Clear and Present Danger. Yeah. Patriot Games.
Do you feel like, I don't know, this whole the Clancy thing it just feels a little bit of a different time.
Yeah, it's like
you know what I mean? Like, I obviously understand that we're sort of in conflict with the Russians, but it all just seems like a little simple for the way things are now. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're 100% right. That's right. This is that. I mean, I think this movie would have hit us different in the 90s.
Yeah, I agree.
It just, it's not really. There's nothing to it from there's no depth to this movie whatsoever. And we were much cooler with no depth action movies from like 93 to 2005.
Yeah, agreed. Happy to see my girl from Queens,
Jody,
and they should put her. She should give her some parts.
Yeah.
Give her some parts.
Go ahead and give her a part where she has lines. You know.
Why is it that my whole life has gone to shit since you showed up?
Yeah, she had like four lines in this movie and one badass murder.
Right. Yep, there you go. All right, that movie was utterly forgettable, and I will have forgotten about it by the time we get out of this podcast.
Yep, forgettable is probably the best word to use to describe it.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to Startup.
Startup?
Curious where you're at on Startup.
Yeah. I am all in on spending nights from midnight to 3 a.m. when I should be sleeping watching Startup for the next month and a half.
Yeah. All right. So I have a question, and I'll be frank. I probably just couldn't have Googled this too. What is this made for? The Startup thing, right? Like it appeared on Netflix for three whole seasons.
It's Crackle.
It's Crackle. Okay.
Yeah.
And there are clearly commercial breaks cut in it, right?
Yep.
So yeah, it seemed like some sort of existing IP that I had just never seen or heard of.
Yeah, it's Crackle. And who knew Crackle had such star-studded programs?
Yeah, there are like real people in this.
Yes, and Martin Freeman is great, and I'm a big Adam Brody guy, and like I love a goofy, you know, people from different worlds thrown together in a criminal situation setup. Like, I'm all in. I'm not going to tell you this is groundbreaking stuff, but like, this seems like a fun show that would have been right at home on AMC, and if it was on AMC, we probably would have been watching it this whole time, right?
Yeah. And I'm kind of glad we did this right after Without Remorse, whose name I just had to look at on paper and didn't remember. because this is also not super deep.
but it's fun.
But it's fun.
Yep.
Right. Like, that's the difference. It's not grim and joyless. Like, there's plenty of joy in it. You know what I mean? Like, it knows what it is. You know what I mean? I don't know how many you watched. I think I'm at, like, four or five, so you may be ahead of me.
No, I think you may be one ahead of me. I'm right around three or four. But at the end of the day, like, this is – it's fun. Everyone in the show seems like they're having fun. It's like a – it's got more caper to it, you know? It's like you don't quite know what's going to happen. There's all these potential twists and turns, and the characters are really fun, right? Like, all four of the lead characters that we've basically encountered so far, Martin Freeman, the Haitian gangster guy, the lady who's creating GeoCoin or whatever it's called, and
GenCoin,
and Adam Brody, they're all interesting, enjoyable characters. Like Martin Freeman, somebody told Martin Freeman, hey, like, we love what you do. Your subtle acting is tremendous, but could you just go way over the top for us? And he's doing it,
man. It's nice to see him not completely overwhelmed, too. You know what I mean? Like, usually he's that guy who's like, can't handle the situation, is in over his head.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And this time he's like, he's the predator, you know, and he's hamming it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it. Did you get to that scene where he gets in a car accident? Like a fender bender?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah. And like, there's no point to that scene other than like, whoa, this guy's crazy.
He's on edge. Yeah. This dude is on the edge.
Yeah. makes time for that. It makes time for all sorts of wanton PG-13 sex.
Oh my god, much sex.
Yeah.
The first episode in particular, the first episode had a very, like, you know, 2002 HBO vibe of, like, this is gonna be entertaining, but also, in case you're not entertained, here's a lot of sex.
A lot of no nudity sex. Yep.
Yeah. Well, everyone's very
Miami,
nude.
So everybody's sweaty.
Yes, everyone's very nude and sweaty and doing really sexy things, but you don't actually see anything. It's very...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which, you know, okay.
So, and Brody's great. Brody's great. He's fine. You know, he's doing Brody things. It's enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is... I didn't quite know what to expect, but this is like a it feels through a handful of episodes anyway, like a really worthwhile, if somewhat disposable, television show.
Yeah, it's very disposable. Yeah. But it is enjoyable. This is, I like, shout out to whoever's doing like Netflix acquisitions, because this is exactly the kind of innings eater you need in the content farm. You know what I mean?
That's exactly right. It's an innings eater. And it's an innings eater that's worth enjoying. And you're not going to have to think too hard, and you're not really going to have to remember too much. It's just fun.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like it's the kind of show where you could miss 3 or 4 episodes probably.
Yeah, probably.
I'd back in, it'd be fine.
Right. I mean, you would
but
miss.
But you won't, because.
Yeah, you'd miss some fun stuff, but you won't be lost, right?
Yeah. Agreed. Although you won't, right? Because it's Netflix, so you're gonna watch them in order.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm all in on that. I'm glad you felt the same, and I kind of expected that you would. I feel like we know each other now.
I mean, there's things.
Well enough.
There's things that are great, and there's, you know, not nothing. There's like not too much weight to worry about. You need shows like this. You need shows like this.
Agreed. Not necessarily during the playoff season. You know what I mean? I'm probably going to have to put this on the shelf and remember to come back to it.
100%.
Yeah. But I will. 100%. But I will.
Speaking of which, I just realized in this moment that I forgot to watch one of the things on the list.
Which was the thing on the list that you forgot?
Betty.
Okay, that's fine. We can shuttle that to next week.
We're gonna have to, yeah.
Man,
I blew it.
That was so that's kind of a gimme, man. It's like 30 minutes.
I know.
That was the easy one.
I don't mind telling you. I have 2 children, 2 parents, a sister, and another house guest at the moment. So it's been a little hectic.
How do they feel about Betty?
I did, and Betty is one.
Sit them all down.
See, here's the other thing. I have to like balance, because my wife doesn't watch a lot of stuff with me because she sleeps,
right?
And I don't. So like the stuff. There's stuff I watch with her that I have to slow play. Anyway, I don't need to explain all my problems to people, but yeah, I blew it.
I bet your little girl's going to love Kurt.
Going to love what?
Going to love Kurt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible.
Who doesn't love her? Okay. Let's get into Starstruck then. You watched that one, right?
I absolutely did, and like, if not for all of those impediments I just mentioned, I probably would have watched the whole thing.
Okay. How many did you watch?
I think 4 or 5 out of like 8.
You're probably a little ahead of me. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I don't think we even really need to talk much about the plot beyond the log line, beyond the elevator pitch, right?
It's
goofy New Zealand born woman meets famous British actor, does not realize he's famous. They bang, hijinks ensue. And I guess the main thing I want to say about this, and I'm, you know, dancing around it in this way because I'm trying to Google something, is that Rose Matafeo, she's just so charming. That's it. Show works. She's so effing charming and delightful. Good show.
Yeah, I think the guy that plays Tom also is up to it.
He's really good. Everyone is good in this, but I don't think this works without that lady just being kind of a star. She's got like an Alana Glazer quality about her, like sort of goofy confidence and like approach, this character's approach to life, and it's delightful.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that that's absolutely true, and it's certainly built as a showcase for her.
Yeah.
I would also say that, yes, it doesn't work without her doing that, but it does. This show does have a nice bench of ridiculous supporting players.
Minnie,
right?
Driver.
that also help. Yes, Minnie Driver going way over the top as the agent, but like, you know, the guy that she works with at the movie theater that has a you know, insane crush on her.
Yes.
Or you know, the guy that like hits on her friend in the very beginning of the show, like he's completely ridiculous with the mustache.
Yes.
Comes up later
What about the hilarious woman that she works for? The like slightly rude but also motherly woman she's worth. Like the little characters are great in this, for sure. It's just like you can't take your eyes off of Rose Matafeo. She's awesome.
Can I give a little bit of criticism?
Yeah.
This all feels a little Phoebe Waller-Bridge light. You know what I mean? Like,
again, it's like this character is basically Fleabag crossed with Alana Glazer, right?
Yes.
That's the character. Fair. But honestly, if I'm an executive, you just sold me a show with that.
Yeah. It's very watchable. I will watch it again. And they, you know, there was a trailer either before or after one of them for Rose's stand-up special. I'll probably watch that too.
That's
it works in that sense.
That's the biggest takeaway, right? I mean, it's not unlike Fleabag. It's not like, oh man, what a sort of groundbreaking piece of work. It's more like, this is fun.
Yeah,
right?
It's B+ Fleabag, but like that's very watchable. You know what I mean?
B+ is a really good show. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Fleabag's an A, but a B+ is really good TV, and this is really good TV.
Yeah. Yep. HBO Max is kind of racking them up right now.
I gotta say, the hit rate on HBO Max content, and I don't know if this counts. I don't know if this counts as, you know, original HBO Max content or not.
It seemed like it aired somewhere else.
Right. It seems like it was probably written for something else. But I mean, this is the first place any of us are going to see it, right? I mean, so.
Sure, yeah.
So it's kind of original HBO Max content. And yeah, the hit rate on HBO Max content is exceptional, I would say. And yeah, Starstruck was on the BBC first. So yeah, big, big thumbs up for me. Big thumbs up.
Yeah. I maybe not quite as high, but I'm definitely way up. Two thumbs up for me. This one's worth watching.
Definitely. And it's an easy.
And maybe not even putting on the shelf until after basketball.
Totally. Because it's easy and fast, right? I mean, you could just bang an episode
extremely easy, yeah.
Yeah. You just watch an episode while you're waiting for the DVR to build up so you can skip commercials in the basketball game. Boom.
Are you doing that? That's part of your strategy?
I have to do that. There's not enough time in the day if I don't skip commercials.
Oh, yeah. See, I like the Twitter second screen experience opportunity. It sort of precludes the DVR.
Right, but I bet you would feel less compelled to second screen if you were going to be talking about the game for 4 hours the next day, you know?
That's true. Are you guys talking about each of these games for 4 hours?
No, but I have 4 hours to get my opinions about the basketball out, you know?
Yeah. So it leads over the local stuff, huh?
Yeah, it depends. I don't know if it leads, but like in a 4 hour
it's gonna come up.
Yeah, in a 4 hour show, we're not doing A's and Giants for 4 hours, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Last night there wasn't a lot to talk about, so I don't know if we're gonna.
All right. Yeah, there sure wasn't. Well, I don't know. There's some stuff you can get out of. I don't want to get too deep into a basketball discussion, but there's some stuff you can get out of that.
Yeah, right now the main basketball discussion is injuries, so I think we can skip it for this week.
That's the whole thing, right? It's a literal war of attrition. Like, I don't know how anybody can reliably predict anything when you hardly know who's available.
Yep, literal attrition and figurative disappointment, because that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, like the Bucks may wind up winning just because they're the healthiest. You know, like yeah. It's dumb.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Top Chef.
Let's.
This was like the Waterworks episode of Top Chef, basically, right? I think it may be. I don't. Obviously, no one's keeping track of this, but if there was a Top Chef record for tears, I feel like we may have hit it in this particular episode, right?
Now, are you talking about tears on the show?
On screen tears. Yeah, oh. on show tears, right?
Yeah, we. I mean, I think it was also, a record setter in off show tears. In my house.
I got you. Right. I mean, you had, there was crying from the contestants when they opened up the care packages, right?
Yep.
And then crying from Brooke and Kristen
yep.
at the same time. And
yep.
then crying during the judging. And I think even the judges got off a couple of tears, I think, in the final three. Except Tom. Like, you know, you weren't.
Well, yeah, not Tom was like, you're a good cook. Nah. But everyone else was crying.
Yeah.
And like I legitimately started crying. Jamie I almost want to cry right now. Jamie friggin' oh man. Like that was that moment that she's like, no, I already had my second chance. You should stay. And like you knew Maria wasn't going to let her leave, but it was such a genuine moment. Like, that didn't feel forced or fake to me at all. Like, she just... Those two women clearly love each other very deeply, you know?
You know, I'm racking my brain. I really feel like this happened once before on Top Chef. That
someone
tried to say...
sacrifice themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, them take them, not me, or take me, not them. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but I agree with you. Like, that doesn't make this moment any less genuine. And it is a testament, I think, to the bond that people form, you know, I think in a really organic way on this show. Like, it's not like you were watching this all season to go and, you know, Maria and Jamie, best friends, you know?
No, but I will say, in retrospect,
they liked each other, and I think it was born out of that moment of and the mutual respect there, you know?
Well, I also think they probably, like, you know, we didn't see it, but my guess is they probably talked about sort of, it seemed to me they have similar insecurities and like they both doubted themselves in the same way coming into this competition. They both have some sort of like understandable inferiority complex with some of these more fancy chefs. Is that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of that's true. I also think that like Kristen's kind of speech to them, or I guess it was to Maria. But it really could have been to Jamie. I thought it was really moving. It came from a real place of empathy about like kind of understanding that, or, you know, thinking that you don't belong, but you know, eventually you realize whether it's here or in your life after here that you know, you are that person, and you can do this. You know what I mean? And you're not standing here by accident.
Yeah, and I think they both
that was cool,
right? And I think they both kind of needed to hear that just for their own confidence levels, you know? And I think here's the other thing. Like, the division here was a division that really exists in the abilities of the remaining chefs. I
yeah,
love...
The right three were on the top and the
right
three were on the bottom.
That's right. And really, like, unless something weird happens... whichever of Jamie and Maria stayed are going home next week, because the final has been those three since the first episode, basically. You know? Like,
yeah.
Gabriel and Sarah were good.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if the final is Gabe, Dawn, and Shota.
Shota.
That feels right. You know? Like that. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
like,
right.
There's no question that on balance, these have been the three best chefs over the course of the
season. So, there's really no shame for Jamie or Maria right now. There's no shame. You did, frankly, for both of them, you both beat chefs that came into this competition as better chefs than you. And you beat them legit, and you guys were awesome. And you're probably not good enough to win, and that's okay.
Yeah, no, I think they'll go on and have good lives after this. And I give real credit to Maria, who, you know, in that highly like emotional moment, handled the whole thing, I think, with the word that she actually used, which was grace. You know, it was like,
yes,
you know, she's like, let me leave with grace.
Yeah,
I think she really did. I thought she gave a tremendous exit interview. She seemed just in general, like, I don't know that she's going to win fan favorite, but I feel like if you maybe had a vote for chef favorite, she might. You know what I mean?
I agree. And here's the other thing. I think for someone, first of all, I'm just looking at the stats right now. And Maria had, she was in 10 challenges. Like, you know, she was on 10 episodes, basically. 10 quick fires. She won one, finished tops in two others, finished in the middle five times, and you know, the bottom twice before she got eliminated. That's a really good season, you know? And I think she came in maybe with as much to prove as any chef you'll ever see, because, like, she was the food truck lady in a world of fine dining, and she whooped a lot of ass in that world, man. That's really, it's a hell of an accomplishment. And I think she may have, you know, as much to gain from this experience as any chef, because I think not only, I mean, for herself, she's proving she can hang with some of the best chefs in the world, which is super cool, but also just, it's like a win for non-fine dining, and I'm here for that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I haven't been there, so sorry if I'm burying you, but I can't imagine there are a lot of super pedigree chefs in Tucson, Arizona.
No,
right? So
I've been to Tucson.
I'm guessing that she's gone from lady operating a taco truck to maybe the most recognized chef in town. You know what I mean? Or even if you throw in Phoenix, right, she's probably one of the now and sort of would be considered in the upper echelon chefs of the area, right? So,
right.
So, you know, good for her. I think that it'll be, you know, that will be a good situation for her. And I think it's probably, it's probably the right place for her journey on this show to end. As we get ready for the final. I also think it's really interesting. I don't know if you watched this one twice, but I watched it a second time, and going back, this show will just drop a breadcrumb. You know what I mean? Where, like, she's popping food and just kind of offhand is like, yeah, you know, my only problem is these beans are a little watery, so I'm going to dry pack them. And then they just kind of move on to something else, right? You know what I mean? And it's such a a nonchalant nothing moment that you later find out is like, well, that's basically the downfall of her on this show.
Yep. Right? Yep.
With those watery beans. So, the show does drop these little breadcrumbs sometimes.
No,
you know?
I think almost always.
They're really cognizant of keeping you guessing, you know?
They are. Well, I think they almost always drop that breadcrumb. They also drop a few others that might not lead anywhere, right? But
right,
yeah. And I think it's also an illustration of at this level, when you're in the top five, especially when there's people performing at the level of Dawn, Gabe, and Shota, the littlest thing, right? Like in that very difficult challenge, both Jamie and Maria prepared a really good central protein, essentially, right? And then.
Yes.
it was a
uninspired side dishes.
An uninspired, well, I would say for Jamie, it was sort of an uninspired overall, like it just didn't come together great and the rice wasn't interesting. But for Maria, it really was just, if she had served that plate with no salad, I think they're like, this is delicious and not as good as the top three, but I think she beats Jamie.
I think you might be right.
And they would have been like, this could have used a side, but that would have been, like, it would have bumped her up. Not having the wet salad would have bumped her up just enough to beat Jamie, because I do think it was very close. And that's the crazy thing about the really high-level final episodes of Top Chef is it's always something tiny like that. It's a tiny mistake that, like, in a restaurant you'd barely notice, but you're competing against Dawn, Gabe, and Shota, who are just not only making incredible fancy food, but also each of them at this point is in total possession of what makes them special and is just like pumping it out with tremendous consistency on a week to week basis.
Okay. All right. Yes. But I feel like this is maybe the time to address something here. Uh-oh. In that you're talking about tiny mistakes and things you wouldn't notice on at a restaurant.
Uh-oh.
But like, we're back to Dawn making a major mistake that you would notice at a restaurant, which is my dish doesn't have any sauce on it, right? Like, we're back to plating errors.
Well,
with Dawn.
It's timing errors, really,
I can't
really,
think
right?
of a contestant that's made this many, timing error, whatever it is, right? Like, that's been this good that's made this many of these errors. In fact, I think because she's been good enough to continue to be on the show after making these errors, it's almost impossible, right?
It's almost impossible.
To make three separate plating errors over the course of one season of Top Chef.
Yeah. Now, there are mitigating factors. I mean, she was lucky that her first plating error was the first challenge, right? Like, she kind of got off.
And you know, it really... I'm not, now that I think about it, you could make a case that it's four, right? Because there was, I'm not going to fault her for slicing her hand open or whatever last week, but right? She had a dish that, like, she couldn't serve, right? In that show, too.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, like, there are sort of mitigating circumstances to all of these, but the common theme is she goes big, and if things don't go perfect, she runs out of time. So, I mean, that's what happened here. It's not like she actually forgot sauce. It's she was rushing and she didn't get to sauce a few of the plates, right? Like,
no, I don't think that's exactly what happened because she seemed unaware, right?
No. I know it wasn't
caught off guard.
No, but I'm saying
two plates.
Yeah, but it was a mistake that was made because we watched her competing with the 5 seconds of remaining time to get that sauce on, right?
Yeah, she was rushing, but like
if she had,
it wasn't just she overlooked it. She wasn't like, I didn't get all my sauces on the plate.
Well,
like,
no.
Usually, you know when you run out of time, right?
You're right.
You know what I mean?
But what I'm saying is, if she had had a literal one extra minute, I don't think that happens, right?
Like, rushing was the reason that she overlooked it.
Exactly.
But it was like, look, as Tom said, it's like these are your food's great. You're making mental errors, and they're gonna beat you. They're infrequent enough with her that like I wouldn't bet on her making a mental error. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think this is relevant. Dawn has won 3 straight quick fires. She honestly, I think the only reason she didn't win this elimination challenge is because of the sauce mistake. Like, I think she had the best dish.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's kind of like right now. This complaint about Dawn, which is totally valid, is kind of the thing making it interesting. Because I think she is so on fire with the actual flavors and dishes she's making that she'd be running away with it if she wasn't making mistakes.
It's interesting to me. It's just interesting to me because I think that, like, this is the kind of thing that you would call, an Achilles heel, right? Except... you know, unlike an actual Achilles heel, right? Like, it hasn't been a fatal flaw, right? Like, she's still here. Like, her food's sort of overcoming these, like, really gigantic for Top Chef mistakes, right? Like, not getting all your food on the plate is a cardinal Top Chef sin that she's making repeatedly. And the food is so good, it's like she just keeps being here. Now we're to the point where you can't win a final if you're getting all your food on the plate. You just can't.
No.
Right?
No.
Here we are. So it's fascinating to talk about. Like, it's not really a complaint about Dawn, other than that, like, you know, other than that, it's like you just. It's weird that you're making the same mistake over and over again. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. That's the part she's gonna have to figure out. But man, you know, I don't know when the next time I'm gonna be in Houston. But I really want to eat this lady's food someday because it sounds like the flavors are just tremendous.
All three of them. I mean, all three of them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go to Austin this summer because I've been, I don't know, three of the last four. And I'm definitely going to try to make sure I get to Gabe's spot when that happens.
I just want – I want his sauce in my mouth. I mean – the way they talk about the flavors of his sauces, you know, it's like,
yeah.
It's,
yeah, I know. Just think of what a great t-shirt that would make.
I think that's a t-shirt that they should sell at his restaurant. Put your sauce in my mouth. It really, of all the things, because Mexican food might be my favorite food. It's like on any given night, if someone's like, what do you want to eat? Mexican is usually the first thing that jumps into my head. And I love moles and like salsas and just the notion that this guy is blowing the minds of some of the most experienced, never mind chefs, but most experienced like fine dining eaters, right? Like all these people eat the best food in the world all the time. And none of them can believe how good his sauce is every single episode. Like, I gotta know what that's about, man. I think that's he's the number one guy. Shota is doing stuff that's crazy fancy and impressive, and I'm sure it's unbelievable. Dawn seems like she just has, again, she knows what she does, and she executes her flavors at such a high level. But the way they talk about that sauce, man, I gotta have some of Gabe's sauce.
Well, and it just seems like he's making art, right? Like, you know, I think Teresa has really been strongly executing Mexican street food all season. You know what I mean?
Wait,
Gabe's
who?
Over here.
You mean Maria?
Maria, sorry. Excuse me. Yeah. Where did Teresa go from? Maria, yeah, was making really good executed Mexican street food. And I think Gabe was making art. You know what I mean? Right? Like, that's sort of been the difference between the two of them.
Totally.
You know? I definitely want to try that. And I like elevated Mexican food is a delight, just in general when I've had it. And it just feels like this is some of the best elevated Mexican food going. So,
same page, bro. Same page. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. We're set up for a hell of a final, you know? Like,
really
I feel
are.
Bad because Jamie is also just a delight to be around. And she got one more in of like, you know, crazy automatopoeical pot descriptions this week, you know, that he still made top, even in that, like, super serious judgy moment, like, just, like, kind of break there for a second.
She's so, and honestly, like, I loved Maria. I think you know, and maybe this is because I really, like, Mexican food, street or fancy, is really my shit. So maybe that's why I loved Maria so much by the end of it. But I think this is the right final because it's the three best chefs and it's fun times with Jamie. Like this is, and I know she's probably not going to make the actual final, but like, this is what I want, man. This is what I want. I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, I think, you know, yeah, a lot. Look, season's been leading up to this for a minute. You know, it might have been more interesting competitively to have like a Sarah here as the fourth person, but I'm great with Jamie. You know,
totally agree.
Just a Hank perspective, and like, there's a bit of a wild card about her, like where if she like,
oh, no doubt,
knocks her concept out of the park, she's good enough to, you know, take one of these guys down.
She is not like irrelevant competitively. She's just the underdog.
Yeah, exactly. So, she's like the Atlanta Hawks in this group. You know. You know what I mean? Like,
I forget.
Yeah, probably not as good. Probably not.
Do you actually feel allegiance to the Hawks? Is that a thing?
No. I mean, the Warriors kind of have my.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
But like, yeah. I mean, look. I feel allegiance to the city. So sure. Like, you know, with the Warriors not being in the playoffs, they've kind of been my adopted team.
I like that.
We
don't have to. I don't want to talk Hawks actually because injuries are really the only story right now. But I have to say, on a non-basketball note, of all the goofy uniform and court city design concepts, Atlanta, if it's not the only one I like, it's the only one that I love. That's for sure. The MLK jerseys with that mosaic hawk at center court.
The stained glass.
It's so cool. Every time they cross center court, I want to like turn to the person next to me and be like, how cool is that?
I agree. Some of these, some of these city uniform concepts have gotten a little out of control.
And that's in all sports, by the way. The baseball crap they're releasing, the only one I've really liked is the White Sox one. Most of them are garbage, but
and ordinarily I would be like, "That's you being biased," but no, that's objectively the only good one.
No, the White Sox really—they're the ones. And actually, I saw a different one the other day that I thought was decent as well. But for the most part, they're dumb.
And they haven't put them all out yet, right? So
it's about halfway.
Right, the baseball ones,
yeah. So, but again, like, there's a lot of stupidity in this, and there's a lot of people who like clearly. Just the concept of let's make an extra jersey to sell extra jerseys was much more important than let's execute a worthwhile design. And that stinks. But
I think it's really frustrating and particularly dumb in the playoffs when you have casual fans.
Exactly.
That like half the time. You
exactly.
Can't
Who
look
is that?
At the TV and you have to like study to figure out which team is which.
Totally.
You know,
it's very dumb. It's very dumb, especially in the playoffs. But that's a discussion for another time.
like, the Nuggets and the Suns the other day are playing, and the Nuggets are wearing uniforms that look like freaking sunshine patterns. They look like a damn sunset. And I'm like, and Phoenix is wearing, like, those valley uniforms with
I actually...
I'm going to get an old guy rant.
I mind the valley ones less, because at least they, like, remind me of the old Suns color scheme, you know? But the red Nuggets uniforms are the most confusing, stupid thing.
And the Jazz have them too.
I know,
right?
And the Jazz have like red and green, and I don't know, man. It's goofy. It's goofy. But
like, where are your damn colors?
We can't. We can't waste our time with this. I feel like we can walk away right now with a short episode, and I would feel good about that.
Yeah, my only point was that, you know, the Hawks can come out and pop out 25 threes in a night against anybody, and that's Jamie in this competition, right? That's it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, could be her day where she's just going to hit a bunch from deep, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's right.
I think at this point, let's go do the homework.
Okay. Betty is now part of the homework as well because I blew it. So we got a nice long list.
I did. And you know what? I can tell all of you right now the Betty discussion next week is going to be short.
Hold on. Maybe we can actually do it without me even watching it. Betty is still really entertaining and we love all these characters. And it's just like a fun world to chill in.
Yep, that's pretty much it. Like, it is a delight. The sort of tone poemness of it is as beautiful as ever. Like, there are some really great shots of a couple different parties in this episode.
Nice.
Like, there's a like you're like all of a sudden you're kind of in a music video for 5 minutes at a time, and then you're back sort of into the semi plot of things. The plot parts are interesting. The video parts are interesting. It's a good hang. Still good. We're done. That's it. That's the show.
Okay, so we might not really need to revisit Betty, but if I if anything pops for me that I want to get into, I'll make a note.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong by kind of glossing over it. Like, if you are not watching Betty, you should absolutely watch Betty. I would recommend it to you. Anyone under the age of 50, I think.
It's an easy, binge, too. I mean, just like it puts you in a mood and you can just sort of sink into it.
Yeah, and you know, I think the season's going to get a little bit more into some of the, you know, some sexual politics, sexual feminist politics stuff that I think is interesting.
I'm here for it.
But yeah, it's a fun time, and it's just, I don't know, it's sort of the experience. Betty's an experience, and it's a quick one, so enjoy it. Okay, so what else we've got? Dave's back tomorrow night.
Dave!
Is it FXX that it airs on? I don't know. I've always watched it on Hulu.
Yeah, we watch on Hulu. On this show, we watch Dave on Hulu.
but I do think it's on actual broadcast television.
Is FXX an actual channel?
It's on regular FX. I just looked it up.
Wow.
But FXX is an actual channel, yes.
Okay.
It's in the 200s on DirecTV. It's not far from regular FX.
All right. Well, there you go. Who knew?
I wrote in my notes, I wrote Rose Byrne. I'm doing the Michael B. Jordan thing again. But Rose Byrne is the star of a show called Physical.
Yes.
That I actually remembered.
Let's
on Apple TV
get
Plus.
Physical.
Yes. And that is definitely the vibe of this show. I'm pretty sure that's where they got the name. And then there is also a show on AMC. It's actually, I think it's already out now if you have AMC Plus.
Yep.
Does anyone? Called Kevin Can F Himself. I think that's the name of it. At least that's the way that they write it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's AMC, so it can't be Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Correct. Although, maybe on AMC Plus it can. I don't know.
That's a good point.
So we're gonna watch that one, and then I think we also were gonna say right now, that we are not gonna cover In the Heights on this show.
Yeah, look,
I hear it's really good.
It sounds like it's really, in fact, better than really good. If you want to watch it, I think it's relevant that neither of us want to watch it, not because of anything other than we don't super dig on musicals, and as far as this show goes, it just doesn't seem like there's any point in two guys who don't like musicals watching a musical and then coming and telling you, you know, that's probably a good musical, but it's not really my thing.
Right. And like, if you dig on musicals, you don't need to hear our opinion on it.
That's right.
So watch it if you want. I hear it's really good.
Support art in the ways that you want to. Well, you know, if you like musicals, support musicals. If you like, I guess there's a bit of a controversy regarding the representational aspect of it. But you know, if that appeals to you, go for it.
I'm not familiar with that controversy, and I'm not going to dive into it.
Yeah,
but if
it's
you like
a colorist
that, do
issue.
It. And if you like pulpy, brainless action dramas from Crackle, then watch those too.
Right. I think you and I both prefer the pulpy, brainless action drama / comedy to the musical. So that's how we're going to spend our time, and I think everybody can live with that.
I agree.
All right. Is that all the homework? We did it?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say bye.
Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.